Both between them crackled and snapped with energy. A lone comms column stood below the shaft's maw, a barb of dark metal studded with convoluted pipework, all connected to a meter-thick bundle of cables that snaked around its base. Cogitator stations, ancient and creaking, lined the chamber's perimeter, their valves and neuroclusters flickering and chuntering as raw data flooded in from the Hierophnical's arrays of auger banks. His estimate had been near enough. 7 mortals, wearing legion-grey shifts, turned to see him enter and immediately bowed, clasping their fists across their chests. 2 were encased in carapace armour and carried projectile weapons. The others had las pistols at their belts. He raised the cortical deadener and released the charge. A snap rang out across the chamber, echoing dully from the shaft's walls, and the 7 occupants slumped to the ground as one, their eyes glassy and blood trickling from their nostrils. He closed and brace-locked the doors behind him, then turned to the nearest cogitator station. The wolves made very little use of written records, but their warships had all been built on Mars, and the automated systems tracked battles just like any other legions. He inserted more access codes into the receptor keypad, waited for the right one to slot in, then watched as the screens before him filled with sigils. He read the Crusade campaign marks with interest. Thulea, Genna, Olama, Terrace 9. There were plenty more, stretching back across the length of the galactic conquest. The 6th Legion had not taken many worlds, but the record of their encounters was second to none in brutality. He scanned the loss tallies with a kind of morbid fascination. 6 cruisers lost, 4 cruisers lost, command pack lost, all packs lost. He wondered how many other legions would have tolerated those wounds. His own? Possibly not, unless they were necessary for the ultimate objective. Then again, what was the ultimate objective for them now? The situation had become complicated. There was so much doubt, so much overlapping of aims, that only the immediate horizon had any clarity. That was the problem with using deception as a tool of war. The blade cut both ways, and just as sharply. He moved on to the records of fleet movements, tallying them with the data he already had. From the Prospero war zone to the rendezvous with the Legio Custodes reserve fleet on the system's edge, to Heligar for secondary operations against 3 15th Legion outposts, to the deep void to refit, then to Alaxis. They had been driven hard, even before the commencement of the most recent hostilities. He studied the logs, updated his list of functional battleships, then sent all of it over the secure channel. He heard footsteps clunking past him in the corridor outside, and worked faster. He gained access to Hierophnical's battle schematics. He scanned across the other capital ships, Nidhoggr, Ragnarok, Fenrisava, Rusfangum. He calibrated their strengths and weaknesses, their damage reports, their combat readiness. He started work on trajectory information, tapping into course change orders and extrapolating the routes still open to them. He knew, as the shipmasters of the Wolves fleet could not, what their options were now. Their ship commanders would have a choice soon. He did not know which course they would take, and neither was it essential to his mission to make such a prediction, but he found himself speculating what they would do in any case. He could take a guess. They had acted true to their natures thus far. As he filed the data for transmission, he heard noises outside the door. Footfalls halted. He paused, hunched over the cogitator, making no sound, no movement, listening. Something sniffed. He heard the code panel being tried, and the door mechanism clang up against the brace lock. He reached for his bolter, retreating silently across the chamber towards the column at its heart. Above him, the open shaft snarled with arcs of electricity, as if angered by his presence. A muffled explosion kicked out, followed by a ripple impact along the metal mesh floor. The doors slammed open, briefly silhouetting a power-armored figure between them. He fired. 3 bolts streaked across the gap, 1 aimed at the helm, 2 at the chest. By then, unbelievably, the wolf had already moved, ducking down, firing blind, running while bent double. He retreated, firing again, using the massive comms spike to shield himself. The legionary closed in fast, his bolter held one-handed, the other gauntlet clutching a short blade that burned with a cold blue fire. Reactive shells slammed and cracked from the walls around them, smashing the picked screens, making the vault echo with jarring impacts. There was nowhere to run. The wolf stood between him and the only exit, backing him up against the far wall, closing in for the hand-to-hand clash. He drew his own sword, activating an energy field as it slid from the scabbard. The wolf leapt at him, and the blades locked. The two of them crashed against the far wall, weapons snarling as their disruptor fields intermingled. "What are you?" the warrior hissed, and there was just a fragment of doubt in that voice. The wolf knew something was wrong, enough to attack without giving challenge, but not enough to quell all his doubts. He pushed back hard, wrenching the wolf's blade edge from his chest, pushing it wide. His other hand had already moved, jamming his bolter's muzzle against the legionary's belt. He fired at point-blank range. The reactive round exploded instantly, hurling the wolf back through the air. He fired again, following up with two more hits to the torso, giving his opponent no time to recover. He ran over to where the warrior lay sprawled on his back, and plunged his energized blade into his stomach. The point jarred through ceramite and into flesh, and he twisted it, leaning his whole weight into it. The wolf's blood spread across the floor. His blade arm twitched, the sword clattered from his gauntlet, and his helm clanged back. He sprang up again, his whole body now burning with hyper-adrenaline. Had the wolf voxed before launching the attack? Were there others within earshot of the combat? Time was now against him, and he was still a long way from the command bridge. His mission was only half complete, and already fate had crippled his plans. Fate. He smiled wryly. Since when did we believe in that? Then he was running, back out of the comms vault, skidding across the corridor beyond, caution now sacrificed for speed. Behind him, eight bodies lay on the floor of the chamber, blood mingling on the metal. Kavar felt the death as a stab in his primary heart, a sharp pain, brief and over suddenly. His mind had been loosely bonded to the world of the senses, half roving in the plain below and free to move amid its mists and darknesses. He had seen the Alaxis cloud part before him, its innards bifurcating, showing the way towards the empty void where they were doomed to die. He snapped back into focus, blinking heavily. He was in a scrying chamber, the air acrid with smoke, the carcasses of ravens open and glossy on the stone before him. His attendants, the bone-clad rune watchers, stood on either side of him, just as they always did. They were like inverse shadows, subordinate and omnipresent.
"Did you feel it?"
Kavar asked them, reaching for his staff. They nodded, already moving. They were twins, those two, gene brothers ripped from the ice and given into the care of the priesthood. Their armor was identical, the runes upon it studies in symmetry. That had always been the way on Fenris, for those Goti powerful enough to command it, two followers, one soul shared across two bodies, or so the old myths had it.
"How could someone have got on board?"
Kavar muttered.
"Do they guard nothing on this ship?"
The doors to the scrying chamber slid open, sending rolls of smoke tumbling across the deck beyond. Kavar strode out, his staff heel clicking, the two rune watchers falling in behind him with their long axes poised. He could have sounded the general alarm, but this way would be quicker, for he already knew where to go and who he was tracking, though it was strange that the killer's soul had only now broken the surface of the warp's skin.
"I dared to come here to the flagship. I am impressed." "Guide me," rasped Kavar,
letting his mind skate across the fragile bond between worlds. He was after a creature of flesh and sinew, but the markers of the deed would hang in the ether like blood in water.
"Warrior or no, he will squeal before I slit his throat."
Russ cast the bone tokens to the ground, and they clattered across the stone. The runes fell among the swirls and intersections of stone floor carving, some face down, some exposed, all illuminated by the rust glow of the nebula's half-light. Bjorn stared down at them, unsure what he was meant to make of it. He was no scryer, and the pattern looked random. Russ, however, pored over the scattering, his expression intent. He knelt down, looking closely at where the symbols lay in relation to one another.
"Jad," he murmured,
letting a finger hover over the token but not touching it.
"Carmen. Liwas. So this one falls again."
Bjorn tried to see what his Primarch was seeing and failed. Russ looked up at him.
"This is the way of it every time," he said. "Variations, but the core is solid."
Bjorn swallowed his pride, knelt down on the stone, and the two of them studied the circles together.
"There are always choices," said Russ. "Fate never closes doors, just shows the cracks around them. This tells me what it has been telling me for days."
He gave Bjorn a dry look.
"That the wolves will never escape the Blood Well."
Bjorn looked at the circles again. For a brief moment, just as the Primarch spoke, he did indeed see something there. Not an image, but a kind of certainty, conjured up by the formations below him. In the blink of an eye, the floor below became translucent, opening up over a gulf beneath, stars falling away to infinity, marked only by a thousand glimmering paths through the void. The vision didn't last, though it gave Bjorn some insight into what the Primarch was seeing. Perhaps Russ was seeing those things even now. Perhaps he always saw them.
"There must be a way,"
Bjorn said, retreating back into the old habit of dogged warrior faith. Russ chuckled mordantly and shrugged.
"I throw these stones across the circle, and I ask two things. Can we run? Can we fight? In either case, it gives me the same answer."
He reached down for the token with the black wolf's head, Morkai. Bjorn did not need to be told what that meant. He found himself growing impatient. The fleet was still in full retreat. Fighting would surely come again soon, and there were better preparations than scrabbling across the floor seeking guidance from the ether.
"These answers are no use to us," Bjorn said, getting back to his feet. "What is the point in asking?"
Russ clambered upright as well, his huge body rolling up from the floor.
"We have to interpret."
He ran a hand through his blonde hair.
"Sooner or later, Gunn will find a way out. He will make for it, doing what he has been trained to do. He will provoke a third battle, believing that the open void will give him the advantage he seeks. At least it will be fighting, he will think. If we are to die before reaching Terra, better to do it with a blade in our hands."
Russ rolled his shoulders, and for the first time Bjorn saw the fatigue in the Primarch's movements. How long had he been doing this, over and over again?
"That, though, will kill us," Russ went on. "And it will kill us to keep running through these tunnels. For the Alpha Legion can go for longer than we can, and faster, and with more ships. So, what remains? I have only this, to go deeper in."
Bjorn looked at him skeptically.
"You said the wolves will never escape the Blood Well." "If the weird has been written."
Russ tried to crack a half-hearted smile.
"Consider us one-handed. We have always fought the wars of others. We have chased down every renegade and Xenos and ripped their throats out. We have broken ourselves on the altar stone of my father's will, and we were glad to do it, for it cemented our place by his side. We started to believe the stories we spun out of nothing to bring terror to our enemies. We were the attack dogs, the sentries, the watchers of the unwatchable."
Bjorn didn't like the skeptical tone in Russ's voice. These were things that were true, things that defined the Legion.
"Always working alone,"
Russ said, shaking his head as if in bemusement.
"Dragging my brothers to task, letting it be known that we would do anything, anything to keep the Great Crusade intact. Hell, I even went after Angron, my wrecked brother. What did I think? That I'd succeed with him? What kind of arrogance was that?"
"We were necessary," said Bjorn evenly.
"Yes, yes, we were. But for whom?"
What other legion would have cracked itself apart on Prospero when it could have been carving out new worlds for the dross of humanity to rot and mule on? Enough of it!
The old anger rushed back. A low growl shuddered through the air, picked up by the supine true wolves, who snarled in sympathy.
Jarl, I do not know what you are telling me, said Bjorn.
Just this, said Russ impatiently. It cannot go on. My brother has ripped the Imperium apart with lies, and if we do not change ourselves, then we will deserve no better than the sorcerers we destroyed. I will no longer be the axeman of the Emperor. I will no longer see my sons crippled, shorn of allies, clinging to old myths of primacy. And there is a path here. There is a road through the briars, and we have to learn to see it.
He reached down again. Three more runes still lay on the stone, all face down. Russ picked them up and showed Bjorn the first two of them.
The serpent. The many-headed beast, he said.
The Alpha Legion?
So it would seem.
What is the other?
Russ turned it over.
Bjorn. The bear. It never falls face up. Never. Why is that, do you think?
Bjorn looked at the scratched symbol, and something within him froze. For an instant he had an unbidden sense of endless grinding time, of cold shadows, of a loss that tore at him like a wound.
"This was why you summoned me,"
Bjorn said.
"You are a part of it. Every time I scry the path of the future, I see you there, on the edge. And so I want you by my side when I remake this legion. I want you with me as we go deeper in."
Bjorn looked up at him, and the vice around his heart did not ease.
"This place hates us," he said. "It will crush us before the end."
"The whole galaxy hates us," said Russ,
grinning with an edge of abandon.
"Always has. If we wish to live, we must spite it a little further."
The uncanny rush of teleportation was mercifully brief. A shiver of the void, a stab of cold, laced with the half-heard howls of emptiness, and it was over. Lord Gunn stood at the centre of a broken sphere of dissipating warp frost. He strode through it, twisting his helm free, shaking the curls of ether residue from his armour. Scryer and Aesir had come across with him, scorning the extreme danger of riding the warp waves between two titanic vessels at full burn. The command bridge yawned away in every direction, opening out onto the crimson void through 100 armour-glass portals. The throne, a massive pile of hewn granite, its arms carved in the likeness of two curved-backed hunting wolves, remained empty, a gap at the heart of the teeming spaces around it.
"Who commands here?"
Gunn demanded, striding up towards the Primarch's seat. Mortal crew members held back, their faces torn between awe and relief. A dozen wolves of the Primarch's own honour guard fell into formation before the empty throne, each one wearing a black mane pelt over ridged armour plate. They were led by Russ's Huskol, the one-eyed Grimnir Blackblood.
"You know the answer, Jarl,"
Grimnir warned, taking his place between Lord Gunn and the place of command.
"The fleet tears itself apart,"
said Gunn, squaring up to him, keeping his hands close to his belted weapons.
"Or are you so blind you do not see what the old man is driving us to? And this is his throne. I do not see him on it."
Grimnir's face was like a grave mask, unmoving, blank-eyed.
"He will return. Until then, no other takes his place."
Gunn spat contemptuously on the ground, and strode over to the main bank of tactical hololith projectors. As he approached, a cluster of road mechanicum magi scuttled to get out of his way. Gunn gestured at the flickering fleet deployment runes hanging in the bridge's command space.
"You can see this?"
he asked scornfully.
"You can read these runes?"
Little had changed since the retreat had begun. The Alpha Legion was still just out of lance range, still monitoring them, still pursuing. The Wolves' flotilla had become dangerously compacted, still operating at full subwarp speed, filling the tunnels from edge to treacherous edge. The ports above them were now a deep dark red. The wolves were running out of space.
"My orders are not to engage," said Grimnir. "You can see where that is getting us."
As Lord Gunn spoke, Skryr and Aesir moved quietly, purposefully, around the edge of the command dais, watched all the while by Grimnir's warriors. The rest of the bridge operated just as normal. Hundreds of Karls and Mechanicum thralls bent over their stations down in the pits, though, when they dared, they shot sidelong glances up at the demigods disputing above them. Grimnir's dead gaze flickered up towards the high real-view portals, through which Alaxis's turbulent matter boiled and seethed. They all knew what happened to ships driven into that poison. He looked back at Gunn, as implacable as before.
"The Primarch charged me. We keep moving."
Gunn narrowed his eyes. It looked like the veins in his neck would burst from frustration.
"We need to turn,"
he snarled, the words swollen with fervor.
"You must surely see this. Someone needs to grip this thing before we are all destroyed. The flagship must command again. I cannot do it from Ragnarok."
Grimnir let a flicker of uncertainty mar his otherwise stony visage just for a second. It was enough. Gunn seized on it, drawing up to him, fresh urgency in his commander's voice.
"We break no faith," he pressed. "You feel the same as I. We are warriors. If he will not do what is necessary, we must."
Grimnir still stood between the Jarl and the command throne. He looked back at the hololiths, at the close formations of Alpha Legion outriders, at the heavy deployments just a few seconds behind them, and the yearning in him showed nakedly. To take them on again, even if it meant ruin, to die with honour, rather than seek his scape with none. But the moment passed. Ice returned to his features, and his hand slipped to the shaft of his axe.
"Come no closer," he growled.
Skryr and Aesir drew bolters, as did the rest of Grimnir's entourage. Lord Gunn glowered in the centre of it all, poised to move, his tattooed brow dark. For a split second he remained static, unable to take the fateful step of drawing blood on the bridge. Once done, that act could never be undone. They all knew it, but still his hand stayed ready to draw.
"Lords!"
called out Hrafnikal's mortal sensorium master, shattering the tight silence. His station was a few metres down from the throne level, and his voice was almost ludicrously thin next to the bestial tones of his master's.
"Forgive me, the cloud."
All heads turned. The real-view portals remained thick with the shifting blooms, just as impenetrable as before, pulling in close and scraping at the edges of the fleet's outriders. The forward hololith projections, though, peered deeper into the oncoming clusters. They picked out the way forward as a wire-frame tunnel, hanging in the vault of the bridge, along with the tactical displays, twisting and turning as it coiled into the depths of the nebula. For hours it had been a single thread, narrowing like a clotted artery. Now it had changed. 20,000 kilometres down, the path branched, threading two separate lines between the dense plumes, one corkscrewing back on itself and plunging into the depths of the cluster, the other shooting straight ahead, widening, aiming true. They could all see what the long-range augurs were telling them about the second strand. Lord Gunnar Gunhilt watched the data unfold and felt a sudden burst of joy, the first he had felt for a long time.
"At last,"
he murmured, letting his gauntlet uncurl from his blade's grip.
"The way out."
He was running now, tearing along the narrow ways. Karls looked up at him, startled. They saw the blood on his armour and the drawn blade, but shock stayed their hands. He wondered if he ran like a wolf. In his mind's eye, he had always imagined them loping, their shoulders rocking as they swept into contact, heads low, panting. The Sixth Legion would know him by his gait, if nothing else, but there was no time left to consider that, to mimic it, to learn by watching. He passed through hangar antechambers feverish with activity. Welders fizzed and snapped against the carcasses of las-blackened stormbirds, all of them clustered with menials desperate to get them void-worthy again. He swept through deserted refectory halls, the metal slabs empty, the utensils kicked over and forgotten. He tried to find hidden ways, side routes between generator housings and service gantries, but his course always forced him back into the open, under the lumens, where his scent would be picked up. He had a constant mental image of the vastness above and below him, the caverns and the shafts and the lamplit halls piled on top of one another, crawling with warriors his equal or better, all trained and honed to kill the outsider. They were coming for him now, and he had so little time left. The task would have been hard enough, even before his cover had been ripped away, but now there was no chance. There was only the attempt, performed for his own satisfaction as much as anything else. At least the fleet's schematics had been transmitted, plus the battle records. That data alone would give his masters the edge they needed, making the incursion worth the sacrifice. He burst out into a wide-open space, and the enclosed walls suddenly yawned away from him. He was on the edge of a chasm, a gulf between sectors. Ahead loomed a metallic cliff face, pocked with blinking marker lights, striated with floor levels rising up into the heights. The deck fell away from him a few meters ahead, and the abyss was spanned by a single bridge, just wide enough for four men, or two space marines, to traverse side by side. This was a defense bulwark, created should the flagship be boarded in numbers. Beyond it would be the command levels, the training cells, the navigation and astropath spires. The far side of the span terminated in a pair of heavy blast doors. The whole place was eerily empty, eerily quiet, though muffled booms echoed up from the depths where the forges still churned. High up on the far wall stood the emblem of the Legion, a snarling wolf's head, 20 meters across and beaten into obsidian black metal. It looked like the threshold to some half-forgotten underworld of human imagination, imbued with the latent terror of the Sixth Legion in their own domain. He powered back into a sprint, knowing how vulnerable he was while out in the open. As he raced out to the bridge, the floor dropped away into darkened clouds of drifting engine smog. The isolation did not last. One moment he was alone on the bridge, running hard for the far end. The next, two white-armored warriors blocked his path, their axes snaking with pale energy. They had snapped into being from nowhere, and now strode towards him, chillingly silent, their bone armor glowing like phosphor in the gloom. He skidded to a halt, aimed his bolter at the closest, and squeezed the trigger. The weapon fired, but the bolts exploded immediately, nearly throwing him from his feet. He swung round, righting himself, feeling a sudden heat at his back, and saw a third warrior approaching from the other direction. He was surrounded, caught out in the open, skewered between foes. He glanced down at the chasm below and saw other spans crossing the shaft, connecting lower levels to their counterparts within the bastion zone. The nearest was a 20-meter drop, after which the plummet went on indefinitely. He glanced back up at his pursuer. This one wore the dark grey plate of the Legion, though it looked strangely ill-fitting on him, as if too big for the wasted frame within. The wolf limped towards him, clanging an iron-footed staff on the bridge deck, his black and white-streaked hair swaying around an unhelmed head. A rune priest, then, the idiosyncratic name the wolves gave their librarians. There was no fighting one of them. He leapt from the bridge's edge, pushing out as far as he could, his limbs cartwheeling out in the open. For a moment, he had the unnerving sensation of being completely suspended amid nothingness, waiting for gravity to yank him down and on to the narrow strip of the lower bridge. Except that it didn't. He remained out over the edge, but he never dropped. Crackles of whip-thin lightning wormed across his armor, and his limbs snapped rigid. Like a fish on a line, he felt himself reeled in and pulled back towards the bridge. He craned his neck to see the two white warriors and their grey-clad master converging. He thrashed wildly against his bonds, managing to break the grip of the psychic hold just as he was pulled back over the edge. He smashed to the deck, activating his power blade as he fell, lashing out as the first of the white warriors reached for him. He batted one outreached gauntlet away, swiped back at an incoming axe head, then swiveled, knowing the rune priest was the greater threat. He charged in low, trying to take him out with speed before the witch could use whatever powers he possessed. The ball of lightning hit him hard, ripping at his helm and sending him slamming and skidding across the bridge's surface. He tasted blood in his mouth and felt his heart kick into overdrive. Another blast hit, sharp and hot as magma, tearing up his breastplate. He hurled his blade, sending it end over end, throwing blind in a desperate attempt to hit just one of them before they ended him. Something heavy cracked down on his right pauldron, shattering the bones within and sending a radial wave of pain shuddering through his torso. He tried to drag himself up again, and felt his faceplate fall away, cracking open like an eggshell. An axe edge plunged into his back, dragging down along the line of his spine, and the agony flared up wildly, making him cry out through bloodied teeth. He felt consciousness slip away, and fought to keep it. He wanted to be aware for when the killing blow came. Despite it all, he found himself grinning through the pain. He'd already done enough. The wolves' fleet movements were known, their movements past and projected, along with their strengths, their weaknesses, and most of all, their strategies, catalogued and packaged, and sent out over encrypted carrier waves, ready to be picked up by the fleet. If nothing else had been achieved, that was sufficient for what had to happen next. He fought against the numb blur that ran up his limbs. The last thing he heard was the rune priest's voice, shocked, outraged, crying out to his bone-armored familiars, "Hold!" And that was the end. He never felt the crack of his bare head hitting the deck, his skull fractured amid the growing pool of his own blood.
"He has done it," said Russ suddenly.
"Done what? Who?"
Russ grinned.
"Gunnar. He has found the way out."
Bjorn wanted to ask how he could possibly know that.
"That is what we need, then."
Russ's grin turned to a sour laugh.
"Open void. Have you forgotten why we went into this place?"
He rubbed his eyes with bald fists, kneading the tired flesh.
"The clouds are our protector. We take the Alpha Legion on in the open, in our condition, with these numbers, and it will be the last battle we fight."
He shook his head wearily.
"Gunn knows this. He wants it. He wishes to die, weapon in hand."
Bjorn could understand that. It was the way he wished to die, too, in combat, face to the enemy. Russ stirred from the ritual circle, pulling the pelts over his shoulders. His movements seemed at once more energetic.
"You have the answers, then?"
said Bjorn hesitantly.
"Answers?"
"You were searching. You called me. Did you learn what you wanted?"
Russ shrugged.
"I only know this. We must not leave. Gunn is here, and he will be pushing the fleet harder now."
He clapped a heavy hand on Bjorn's shoulder, the burly punch of a brawler, roughly affectionate, a thin mask over brutal power.
"I feel reborn."
Then he started walking, clapping his hands for the true wolves to follow. They uncurled from the deck, tongues lolling, amber eyes glowing.
"Come, one-handed,"
Russ said, opening the doors with a gesture.
"We have a Jarl to bring to heel."
K'varr gazed down at the body. The Space Marine lay prone on his back, his helm half torn away by the lightning the rune priest had unleashed. Underneath was a bloody face covered in flecks of broken ceramite. The rune watchers came to stand beside him, and the three of them studied their kill. Except that the warrior wasn't dead yet. He was tough. One of his hearts was still beating, and he had gone into a restorative coma. One of the rune watchers raised his axe, ready to bring it down across the warrior's neck. K'varr lifted a finger, and the axe blade was withdrawn. K'varr knelt down, feeling his atrophied joints creak as he lowered himself. The wasting disease that gnawed at his bones was only partially contested by the gene conditioning that enabled him to wear his armor. He was a fractured thing, part superhuman, part invalid, and only a rune priest would have been suffered to live with such weakness. He prized the rest of the shattered face mark from the warrior's flesh, pulling the vox grill away and discarding it. The warrior had snow-pale skin, thin lips and a pronounced haughty bone structure. His black hair was slicked down in clumps amid the ruins of his helm's inner systems. K'varr flicked up the warrior's eyelids,
looking at the brown eyes. He projected his mind into his, but found only echoes of consciousness to draw on. Even so, there could be little doubt. He looked up at the rune watchers, who were as silent as ever.
"A riddle," he murmured, speaking to himself,
surprised that he had not sensed it earlier.
"This one is not a serpent."
He pursed his lips, for once entirely blind to the onward turns of fate.
"And so, now we ask this," said Kvar thoughtfully. "What is a son of the lion doing in the Alexis Nebula?"
Chapter 3 The junction between the ways drew closer. Lord Gunn never approached the command throne, but his orders now rang across the Hrafnakel's bridge. His two adjutants, Scryer and Acer, maintained their positions at the top of the wide stairway leading up to the command platform. They shared the space uneasily with Grimnir's forces, but for the moment their weapons had been placed back in their scabbards. With the advent of a genuine choice, one for which Russ's standing orders gave no guidance, all now deferred to the Jarl of Onn. Gunn himself studied the auger schematics intently. The gas tunnel, narrowing for so long, plunged down tortuously, winding like a dragged length of entrails, before reaching a spherical chamber no more than a few hundred kilometers in diameter. Two spurs ran clear of that chamber, one angling back and leading further into the nebula's heart, one heading, so the augurs told him, clear to the border. The maneuver would not be straightforward. The entire fleet would have to be piloted down through the aperture without losing any more ships to the encroaching gas, for he would need every lance and macro cannon for what came next. Once out in the void, there would be nowhere left to run, no shoals to beach upon, and no corrosion to devastate void shields, just a final reckoning, with the Hrafnakel at its heart. Gunn knew how far the wolves would take that. He knew what they would suffer to gain the win, and he knew what pain they would absorb to break the back of their tormentors.
"You have the numbers," he thought, looking at the Alpha Legion vanguard as it maintained the chase. "You have the weapons. You have the position. But do you have the stomach?" "Enact formation change," he ordered.
The command was passed down the ranks and sent out across the fleet, and the ships began to move. For the bulk of the pursuit, Ragnarok and Hrafnakel had taken station at the rearguard in order to see off any strikes from the Alpha Legion fast attack wings. But now the two battleships started to crawl forwards, outpacing the destroyers around them, ready to assume ownership of a new vanguard. Tactics were reordered, moving from the spatial requirements of confinement to standard open void patterns. The intersection was still a long way off. The exit from the cloud was further still, but already the plan was crystallizing in his mind. The fleet would burst clear of Alexis, slow rapidly and perform a full about to present their arms to the aperture. As the Alpha Legion emerged behind them, the wolves would let rip, concentrating all fire at the point from which the enemy had to emerge, taking out as many ships as they could. That would hurt them. It might not even up the odds, but it would make them bleed. After that, the carnage could begin in earnest, up close and ship to ship, in an orgy of shield-breaking.
"Do you have the stomach?" he thought again,
repeating the words in his mind like a mantra.
"I cannot believe you do."
"Jarl!"
came an interruption from the sensorium decks.
"They are reacting!"
He glanced over at the hololith banks, and saw the Alpha Legion vanguard creeping closer. They had clearly seen the same thing as they had— the divergence, the chance for breakout. Gunn smiled savagely. He could see the fast-attack frigates piling on engine burn, pulling ahead to clear the shots for the monsters beyond.
"You cannot stop this now," he murmured,
speaking softly to his pursuers and watching the glowing runes shift like pieces on a regicide board.
"No one can."
They dragged the body through the blast doors, up into the closest sealable chamber. The two rune watchers took up position outside, leaving Kvar and the infiltrator alone. The rune priest propped the dark angel up against the chamber's wall. The remnants of his helm and gorget kept his head upright, and a mix of blood and drool ran down from his slackened mouth. Kvar gripped the dark angel's jaw and brought the tip of his staff closer. The shadow of the mounted skull fell across the warrior's battered face, making his features look cadaverous.
"Awaken!"
hissed Kvar, lifting the dark angel's chin. He could sense the flame of the warrior's soul burning weakly. It would not take much to snuff it out.
"Come back,"
Kvar said, sinking his own mind into that of his subject. He saw the soul running ahead of him, flitting like a deer between trees. He gave chase, weaving between shadowed boles, calling out. The dreamscape was not like any forest of Fenris. It was rich, mottled with verdancy, as ancient as the bones of the world upon which it stood. He caught up, grabbing the fleeing figure, reeling him back, tearing him out of the mirror realm and back into the world of the senses. The dark angel came too, coughing up blood, his eyes glassy and rolling.
"Stay,"
commanded Kvar, his hand slipping to the dark angel's exposed throat, feeling for the strength of his pulse.
"I do not permit you to die."
The warrior stared stupidly for a moment, disorientated and struggling to breathe. Kvar waited, maintaining the barrier between the worlds lest the dark angel's soul slip back into the underverse. Slowly, his breathing returned to something close to normal. The bleeding clotted, the eyes clarified.
"What are you named?"
asked Kvar. The dark angel did not reply. It didn't look like he'd understood.
"What are you named?"
asked Kvar again, this time inflecting the words with command, forcing truth.
"Ormond,"
he rasped, hacking up more blood from his throat.
"You are of the First Legion?"
"As you see."
"What are you doing here?"
"I could ask the same thing."
Kvar let go of Ormond's jaw.
"If your helm had not been broken..."
"You would have killed me,"
Ormond hacked again.
"Yes, that was the risk."
Kvar looked down at his armour, a decent resemblance to Sixth Legion markings.
"It may still happen."
Ormond looked up at him, his breathing stabilizing.
"Traitor or loyal?"
"What?"
"That is the only question now. Who commands the attack dogs and the Hydra? But your answer matters not. We have the data. My mirror on the Alpha has done the same thing. Unless he was caught sooner than me. Perhaps they were quicker. After all, they are born to this."
Kvar narrowed his eyes.
"You do not know what has happened, do you?"
"Prospero burns. The galaxy is riven by storms. Two legions enter the Alexis Nebula, each at each other's throats. Terror is cut off and all dreams become nightmares. What, in our position, would you do?"
Kvar began to understand.
"And there are more of you?"
"Many more."
"Where?"
Ormond tried to rise and failed, falling back against the chamber wall, his breath rattling.
"You know nothing of this place. Alexis is a fortress. There are depths, and in those depths are treasures."
"The lion,"
Kvar ventured, grasping at the faint chance. For all their history of antagonism, the Primarch Lion-El Johnson and Russ together would surely be enough to turn the tide. Ormond's bitter smile returned then.
"The lion? How would I know?"
He edged closer, conspiratorially, as if enjoying the exchange of confidence.
"And I care not, for I give less than a damn for the lion. None of us do."
Kvar must have given away his surprise, for a glint of satisfaction showed in Ormond's bloodshot eyes.
"If you wish for the truth, it is this. We were sent to this place by Caliban's protector, following shameful orders that were obsolete before they were given. It is he who we follow. And it is by his will that you live or die.
Ormond smiled coldly.
Best you know this now, priest. You are among Luther's army now.
Russ and Bjorn entered the command bridge just as the tunnel intersection drew within 5,000 kilometers. For a moment none but the guards at the gates noticed them, and all other eyes remained fixed on the forward oculus, the hololith projections and the fleet position indicators on the tactical screens. Russ waited for a moment, amused, standing with Bjorn and the two true wolves in isolation. Lord Gunn was the first to pick up the scent, and twisted around. The others followed, greeting the Primarch's return with a mix of shock and relief.
"What is this, then, Gunn?"
asked Russ, swaggering up to the throne.
"The last I heard, you were on Ragnarok, where you belong."
Gunn glared back at Russ, still with one foot on the command throne dais.
"There is a way out, Lord. The void beckons."
Bjorn remained at Russ's side, keeping close watch on the other warriors. The bridge hummed with an air of tight expectation. They were sniffing around one another, tasting the potential for violence. Aesir and Skryr drew closer to their liege lord. Grimnir and his followers shadowed them.
"A way out," said Russ, musingly, looking at the projections.
"And a way in. It seems we have a choice."
Gunn's face flickered with exasperation.
"Oh, you are jesting, of course."
Russ gazed around the bridge. His ruddy skin glowed with amusement, but there was a hard undertone to it.
"I think the time for jesting has gone now, Gunnar," he said, flanked by Freki and Geri.
He glanced at the tactical displays, glimmering above them in hololithic translucence.
"We will take the turn. We will go deeper in."
"No!"
Gunn's outburst was involuntary, an expression of pure frustration.
"There is another way!"
"We have tried that, have we not?"
Russ's voice dropped, as if offering the Jarl a way to back down without confrontation.
"Gunn, no one doubts your valor. But this time, believe me, it will not be enough."
Gunn glanced up at the intersection, now rapidly approaching.
"The movements have been planned,"
he insisted. "They can be changed."
"Not now."
Gunn's face twisted into anger. As his stratagems dissolved, he was losing the fight.
"Where have you been, Lord? The orders have been given."
"You should have learned trust by now. We will not leave the cluster. We will take the route deeper in."
"No! We will not!"
Lord Gunn's fangs were bared. The old warrior was scarcely less imposing than his Primarch, a head shorter and less bulky in armor, but with the scarred, hook-fanged mien of the seasoned fighter.
"I care not what the runes say. We have fled for long enough."
That was an open challenge. Bjorn felt his lightning claw twitch almost involuntarily, and heard the throaty snarls from the true wolves. All across the bridge, warriors silently prepared themselves. Russ, though, reached for no weapon. He strolled over to Gunn, casually, his hands open and held loosely.
"It has been hard for you,"
he said, his voice still soft.
"But I warn you. Check yourself. I will need my shield-bearer at my side."
"He already is,"
said Gunn, witheringly, his eyes flickering towards Bjorn. Russ's gaze darkened.
"Go back to Ragnarok. Take the order."
By then the two of them were just a hand's breadth apart. Lord Gunn looked up at the Wolf King, his expression unreadable.
"This is how it starts," the Primarch said to him. "Resentment, real or imagined. It grows, and there are powers ready to feed on it. Do you think it was different with Horus? He made a mistake. One mistake. And that was the end. Do not be like him, brother. Remember your vows."
"We were made to fight,"
hissed Gunn, his defiance bleeding into something like desperation.
"True enough,"
said Russ, reaching down, placing a gauntlet on his shoulder.
"But this is what divides us from the 12th Legion. We pick our battles. I will need you, Gunn. This will be your triumph.
Then he reached down and whispered something into the Jarl's ear. Bjorn was standing too far away to hear what was said, but it was brief, just a few words. When Russ lifted his head again, Gunn's expression had changed. It remained hard to read, but the defiance had gone. Russ turned away from him and addressed the bridge.
"Deeper in!"
he cried.
"We have been shown a path. We will take it. Look to the viewers and see that the enemy knows our mind. Resume full burn. Realign the fleet to defensive formation. They will come at us now, just as they see what we do."
All across the bridge, thralls hurried to enact the new orders. Grimnir's warriors stood down, withdrawing from the positions they had taken to defend the Primarch. Warning klaxons sounded as the new trajectory was entered. The deck shuddered as the plasma drives keyed into a new register, gaining speed again, sliding from one set of instructions to another. Lord Gunn stood silently for a while, as if all of that meant nothing. Then, without saying anything else, he turned, beckoning for his two escorts to follow him. Bjorn watched them head back to the teleporter station, though his attention was soon dragged back towards Russ. The Primarch strode to the edge of the dais, overlooking the ranks of his people. His wolves curled and paced around him, no longer sluggish, their fur standing stiffly and their fangs bared. Russ was reinvigorated, vital once more, calling out orders with his shoulders pushed back. All around him the Legion crew raced to fulfill his demands. They went swiftly, surely, happier now that the chain of command was clear again, and their every movement betrayed the same singular fact. The Wolf King has returned. It was infectious, and Bjorn was not immune. As the Hrafnical sheered around, its damaged vastness responding to the new orders, he felt a shiver of anticipation. The Alpha Legion were closing. The coming maneuver would be tight and bloody, with no surety of success. No matter. The hunt called again.
"Now we must move," Kvar told Ormond.
The Dark Angel winced and tried to rise. The injuries he'd been given by the Rune Watchers were severe, though, and he collapsed. Kvar hissed with irritation, and reached down to his belt. He emptied some dried herbs from a leather pouch, crushed them between his fingers, and forced them into Ormond's mouth. The Dark Angel chewed, gagged, and nearly spat them out again.
"Throne," he slurred. "What foulness do you people eat?"
Kvar shot him a wintry smile.
"It will preserve you."
The rune priest grabbed him by the arm and hauled him up. Ormond managed to stagger to his feet, his flesh even paler than usual. The two of them limped to the doorway, Kvar supporting the heavy burden, Ormond struggling to keep his precarious footing. The door slid open, and the rune watchers came to their aid, sliding their hands under the Dark Angel's shoulders.
"The Lord of Winter and War is back on the throne," Kvar told his servants,
inclining his head for a moment, listening, sensing.
"We do not have much time."
"Then the choice has been made," slurred Ormond,
his head reeling as he was dragged along by the two silent rune watchers.
"You have no use for me."
"You know what waits for us if he takes the harder path."
"It matters not. I cannot help you now."
Kvar glared at him.
"You can tell him what lies at the heart of the Bloodwell."
"I did not come here to give you counsel."
Kvar forced the pace.
"We will see. He can be persuasive."
"So you'll hammer it out of me?"
Ormond coughed out a bloody laugh.
"Then your reputation is deserved."
Kvar rounded on him.
"We keep our oaths. While under my protection you will not be harmed. I will take you into his presence, and you will see for yourself who is worthy of your counsel."
"It matters little," replied Ormond, shrugging weakly. "They already know all your secrets. Whether you live or die is no longer in your hands."
Kvar started walking again.
"That has been the case for a long time, Dark Angel," he muttered.
The Space Wolves fleet shot into the intersection, breaking from the long tunnel and careering through the narrow chamber between the ways. Ahead of them lay the straight path, leading to the exterior, a gaping maw amid the semi-stable clouds of swirling red. It would have been easy to plunge straight into that, following the spear straight road to the open void, but instead, all the ships applied retro thrusters, throwing flare patterns of angry neon ahead of themselves before twisting upwards to face the second opening. The outriders were more agile, turning on their axes and angling over to the new course. The manoeuvre was a tougher proposition for the Leviathans, which burst into the intersection amid lattices of priming thruster burn, their massive bulk fighting hard against the sudden application of reverse force. Harafnikel was first out, having been pushed by Russ to take up the lead position, followed by Russ Van Gun and Fenrisava. The rest of the fleet ships, frigates, destroyers, gunship carriers, picket vessels, piled in after them, still perilously close to one another, straining like cattle on the stampede. The turn was ludicrously tight. It would have been a challenge to execute, even without the closing presence of the Alpha Legion hunters. One of the flanking destroyers, a veteran of Void War from the earliest days of the Crusade, with the ident Svart Sol, took the turn too wide and ran into a vomited corrosion spur on the sphere's inner edge. Its dagger-line profile tumbled further in as its plasma drives overloaded and explosions rippled along its flanks. The momentum was unstoppable, and Svart Sol was swallowed up by the shifting innards of the cloud, its void shields crackling crazily, its systems exploding in series. Unable to pause, the main fleet powered onwards, sweeping around through the heart of the intersection chamber, taking up new positions, the smaller ships shifting and tacking to avoid the massive vessels on every side of them. A flurry of void mines was ejected in staggered waves to block the entry point, but little else could be done to slow the Alpha Legion advance. Every crew member on every vessel was fully occupied in bringing the fleet into its new orientation. All except one. Ragnarok was the last out, and made no attempt to haul its prow into line. Instead, the battleship rolled into a broadside attitude, standing sentinel over the chamber's entry point, its guns already primed to fire. As soon as Bjorn saw that, watching the encounter unfold from the bridge of Harafnikel, he knew what had been conveyed.
"Did you order this?"
he asked Russ, unable to take his eyes off Ragnarok's position.
"I freed him to take his own course," said Russ,
concentrating on the route ahead, his gaze barely flickering. The first Alpha Legion vessels broke through the mine cordon, crashing into the spinning points and detonating trails of plasma along their sides. Two were destroyed in crashing balls of flame, but four got through, then seven more, until the Forerunners were surging through the gap. Forward lances whined into life, ready to cut through the still-turning heart of the Wolves' fleet. But one obstacle lay between them and their prey. The Ragnarok opened up with a full broadside volley, its macro cannons spitting colossal amounts of ordnance into the approaching Alpha Legion offensive front. The fire pattern was that of a commander with nothing to lose. There was no attempt to conserve ammunition, just an unloading of every last scrap of ship-killing potential left in the warship's battered frame. The whole vessel shook as its wrath was poured out, and the red glow of the clouds was temporarily eclipsed by the supernova of weapons discharge. Alpha Legion corvettes exploded instantly, blown apart as their shields were overwhelmed. Follow-up craft were immolated in turn, caught by the expanding waves of solid round fire that punched through void shields and smashed apart armor plates.
"He cannot follow now," observed Bjorn,
watching as Ragnarok dragged itself into a full halt, holding sentinel over the entrance to the intersection, and throwing all its remaining rage at the oncoming maelstrom. By then, Harafnikel had angled for the escape. Along with the rest of the fleet, the flagship kicked main thrusters back to full power and leapt forwards, accelerating hard for the second of the two apertures, the one that led deeper into Alexis. Scattered long-range fire from the lead Alpha Legion ships raked across its flanks, but most was absorbed by the Ragnarok, still interposed between the two fleets, a lone guardian blocking the gate.
"He does what he must,"
said Russ, his jaw clenched tight. The aperture ahead of them was as tight and constricted as any of the others, and bringing the entire fleet through it would be an act of supreme ship mastery. Harafnikel's structure screamed as the engines ramped up, hurling it away from the battle in a burst of thruster blaze. The remaining capital ships followed, speeding up to full velocity, their plowshare muzzles dipping for re-entry. The aperture's edge raced towards them, ragged, gaping like a maul wound, and